Firstly, can you explain a bit about the trial that is happening in Olympic Park?
Yeah, look, the Olympic Park trial is a trial of a electric shuttle bus that's made in France by a company called Navia. The trial is about trying to understand how a shuttle bus like that could operate in a precinct like Olympic Park. The shuttle bus is highly automated, so how are customers going to respond to it? How does the technology navigate the different systems there? What kind of communications we need and connectivity for a vehicle like that to operate? And how people are going to respond to it. So the trial's about those things. Currently, the shuttle bus has been tested in an off-road environment, so we know it's safe. And then later this year and early into the next year, we'll start actually on-road around Sydney Olympic Park to test some of those things I was talking about earlier.
And are there any issues or concerns that have come about so far?
Well, not so far. We've done some pretty significant safety tests on it to make sure that it'll stop for pedestrians, that it can navigate the road network. And there's a lot of good onboard safety systems that the vehicle uses. So the vehicle has things like LiDAR, other kinds of tracking radar. It has cameras, and it operates on a 3D map of the road that it operates on. So we've gone out and we'll map the road first. So it knows where it's going, and it's got some really good sensors to make sure that it can stop if anything jumps out in front of it. This is kind of not quite a prototype, but it's a real early version of these kind of vehicles, and they're designed to be safe foremost, rather than taking risks on other kind of mobility side of things. So it's a really safe vehicle from our experience so far. So we haven't come across anything of concern, but what we've found is that people who've had a ride so far are really interested. It's a really new experience for them, and people generally are adapting pretty quickly. They hop on board, they kind of like how it looks, and before you know it, they're sitting facing backwards having a conversation with someone else, not even thinking that there's no driver operating the vehicle.
And in relation to connectivity, how will the cars be connected to traffic lights, stop signs, and other cars?
That's a really great question, because it's one of the key research topics of this trial and lots of work that's happening around the world right now. Connectivity is one of the key things that people aren't 100% sure of exactly how it could operate. What we want to try and do with this trial is have the shuttle bus connect to traffic lights so it knows when the lights are green. And then we can also, in the future, use those kind of systems to make sure we can manage traffic the most effectively and get the most out of our traffic system. So connectivity is really important. The actual technology we might use to that could vary. We could use digital short-range radio that communicates straight from the car or the vehicle to that set of lights. We could use a cellular network where we use the existing cell towers to communicate between that and the traffic systems. So there's a range of technologies, but that's a really important thing that we're trialing at the moment.
How will driverless cars increase safety, minimize congestion, and make people more mobile?
Look, the reason we're interested at Transport for New South Wales in driverless cars or highly automated vehicles is because we believe they'll really provide benefits in all those areas you talked about. So if I go to safety as a starting point, we know that 90% of fatalities involve human error. So as a car becomes more driverless, as there's more automated systems, you reduce the chance of people making mistakes. There's already cars out on the road right now, so some Teslas, Volvos, you know, Audis, and a couple BMWs and Mercedes as well. But they've got automated technologies on board that are already improving safety. They've got things like lane keeping assist, so they keep you in your lane, so if you're a bit tired or you make a mistake, you don't drift into oncoming traffic. They've got automated emergency braking, so if someone steps out in front and you don't notice, the car can brake itself. And they've also got something called adaptive cruise control, where they can cruise. You can set a speed that they cruise at, and if someone pulls in a bit too close to you, the car can slow down, create the space it needs, and then get back up to the speed it wants to drive at. So from a safety point of view, there's some significant opportunities to reduce our road toll by just reducing that chance of human error. Some of those other things you mentioned about mobility, look, Waymo, which is Google's automated vehicle company, the reason that they are so driven, one of the reasons they're so driven around driverless cars is because they've had customers come to them who are blind and say, well, especially in the US where there's not a huge amount of public transport, having a driverless car will really help me get around, because I don't need to see to get in a driverless car and have it take me somewhere. And so then you can extend that to a whole range of other people who might not necessarily be able to drive, but in the future, potentially a car could come up and take them somewhere. And in terms of congestion, again, that's a big question that we really want to answer. But I think what's really important for congestion, it's about having a system where vehicles are connected really well to our traffic management systems, which is something we already do at the moment. But having a driverless vehicle where it is connected might allow us to make the systems a bit more efficient.
How would the cars react once they're put in the real world where, you know, something unexpected may happen? Kind of what you were explaining right now, that, you know, you get in your car, you kind of really don't think about it. How would the car know to automatically stop?
So basically, there's some key technologies that help a car to become driverless. So you've got things like radar, a LiDAR, which is a laser-guided radar, which can virtually be the eyes of the car. It can scan the road ahead for a few hundred metres to see what's up ahead. Most of these cars have a 3D map of the road environment on board, so they know what the road should look like. Then they can use a radar and other sensors on board to see if there's any kind of things that are unexpected on the road. So they're constantly scanning like a person would, constantly looking up ahead. They're looking at their 3D mapping that's in their computer system, and they're always aware of what's going on, and they're not distracted, which is something that, you know, we all do when we drive. We do get distracted because we've got other things going on in our lives, other distractions that happen. But when it comes to an automated system, it's just always on task. It's always scanning the road ahead and doing those kind of things. So when it comes to automated systems operating with other drivers on the road, well, it's kind of already happening in a small sense right now with cars like Teslas and Volvos. But as things get a bit more broader and we get a lot more driverless style of vehicles on the road, those vehicles are always going to be being more cautious and looking out for what other people are doing. So if anything, for other drivers, it's the fact that some of these vehicles might actually be a bit more cautious than a normal driver might be. But from the driverless vehicle's point of view, it's always going to be operating as it should in a safe way. So it's always going to be trying to keep in its lane, obey a set of traffic lights, and be vigilant all the time. So I think as you get a mixed fleet, when you've got drivers and you've got driverless vehicles on the roads, I think there's some situations where a regular driver might not expect the car to be so cautious, but I think overall, it'll only increase the level of safety on the roads.
And once the driverless cars have been given the green light for the general public, what would that mean for the cars that are already on the road?
Look, I think it'd be a phased approach. I mean, this is anyone's guess. There's always a bit of speculation about when this will happen, when we'll see driverless cars everywhere. And lots of different people speculate about when those dates might be, but it's always going to be a bit of a transition. I don't think we'll ever arrive at a point where you can only be on the road if you're in a driverless car. And I think because there's already cars right now with some kind of autonomous driving systems that do some of that work, it's going to be a bit of an evolution. So I don't think it'll be suddenly a matter of other cars have to get off the road. I think it'll just be a slow transition. There might be some areas, like in busy CBD areas, where there's a lot of things like driverless taxis and things like that, compared to the open road or in country roads where there'll probably be more cars being driven by people. So it'll be a mix, but I don't think it'll ever be a point where it's only going to be one or the other.
And for the further future, may these tests and trials lead to the possibility of having driverless ferries and possibly trains?
Wherever there's, I guess, an opportunity to provide a benefit for transport customers or for businesses, people are going to look at automation and things like artificial intelligence to see, you know, if they can make things a bit better for everyone. So I think things like driverless ferries, driverless trains, they are on the horizon. They're happening in other jurisdictions. And look, the metro that we're working on in Sydney at the moment, that's a driverless train. So that's something that's not very far off into the future at all. You've already got driverless trains in places like Singapore and Hong Kong.